This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. My name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Jim Jerome from Osler Wines in the Waitaki Valley. How are you, Jim?
Yeah, good, Chris. Good to have you here and discovering this new land.
Yeah. Well, Waitaki is central Otago, or Otago, not central.
Definitely not central.
No, north, is it northern Otago?
So our new geographic indicator, which has been registered, is Waitaki Valley, North Otago.
North Otago.
In fact, we're east of central Otago, but it's called North Otago.
Yeah, so a lot of people, certainly my listeners, know about central Otago because I've been up there and done quite a few podcasts over the years. But I haven't done one in Waitaki Valley, this sort of newish region down here. Mainly because I haven't made it here. I normally head up central when I've got a chance. But I've been staying at my dad's and he's in Palmerston, not too far down the road. We've come up and seen what you're doing up here.
Well, that's terrific. I mean, we're pioneers in what is one of New Zealand's last or newest regions to be discovered or developed. And I think we'll probably will be the last. Ultra cool climate. Close to the 45th parallel with more of a maritime climate than central Otago.
Yep.
And very different geology, and I guess that's our point of difference.
Yeah, we're going to talk about all those different things. I've got some questions for you, but your background is as a doctor, isn't it?
Yeah, I was a GP, and I had a good career. I ended up running a student health service at the University of Otago in Dunedin. I was herding cats.
Students, not cats.
Well, no, staff, actually 35 medical and paramedical staff and good people, but I wasn't cut out probably for that admin.
Yeah.
And we're trying to look after 18,000 kids all trying to do themselves injuries in creative ways.
Yeah, and we're in Dunedin, we're here now in Waitaki, and it's just finished capping week. And which is where all the students get
orientation to week.
Orientation, yeah. Oh, orientation week.
O week. First of the damage is done.
Yeah. So I'm sure they've been drinking some wines, but probably not your stuff because your wines are pretty
I think they're probably drinking Spates beer.
I must admit, I had some Spates when I was in Tauranga recently. So, it's not.
That's a classic.
Yeah, it's not the best beer, but it's definitely where the home is, heart is, I suppose.
Exactly.
You're making wines up in Waitaki Valley, which, as you said, was a little bit north of Dunedin and quite far south of Christchurch, but quite close to the coast.
Yeah, so our vineyards are four vineyards along the length of a valley which drains the whole of the central South Island. It's the valley that actually divides Otago from Canterbury to the north.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got four little vineyards spread over 25 kilometres with a remarkable range of geographical features. I guess I love the cliche that wine is liquid geography, and most of our wines are single vineyard.
Mm-hmm.
And really express what they're growing on.
Okay. Before we came here, you took me up to your Clos Osler, and just for my wife who's going to be editing this, Clos Osler. Because I'm no good at French names, but you've called it Clos Osler, which is a French word. You know, clos means within an
enclosure.
Enclosure, yeah. Why did you go for that?
I guess our model and the variety of grapes that we grow here are Burgundian grapes, and if you're lucky enough to go to Burgundy, as I have been, and see this very historic origin of both Pinot Noir and Chardonnay grapes. You'll see that they're little vineyards that are all surrounded by the walls that have been made out of the limestone. Mm-hmm. And limestone's the feature here, or calcaire as the French call it. These walls are made out of the stones they've pulled out of the vineyards over two millennia. And they call each of these little vineyards a clos, an enclosure.
I saw you've actually got a wall like that. It's not quite dry stone walling because I saw concrete in the middle of some...
No concrete.
Are you sure?
It's a dry stone wall. It's just got gravel in the middle.
Oh, gravel. Okay, fair enough. I noticed that the guy who made it sort of... It's got his name and it sort of says, at the age of 74 or something crazy like that. Who was it?
Well, Roy is an extraordinary man. And he had been a block layer when he was in his teens, but he'd never done anything like it since. He had been the concrete batch master at some of the big hydro dams that actually feature in this valley. But when he came in as a 73-year-old and worked for us in the vineyard, he saw these piles of rocks that we'd pulled out of the ground when we were preparing it for planting. and he wanted to make a rock wall for us. And he went and read it up in the library.
Okay.
And he'd been a marathon runner.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he could look at each metre and say, I can do that. 1.2 tonnes, or the rocks shifted three times. But he could do it. Well, I would look at the whole thing and say, it's 200 metres, I can't do that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, nice, nice. And it justifies the name Clo as well. Which
absolutely.
Is brilliant. Okay, so the key thing there, I think, was that limestone. And you don't, even though New Zealand's maritime, it's got, you know, mountains in the middle, you don't see a lot of limestone. Although Oamaru, people talk about Oamaru stone, which is a sort of limestone. There's not a lot of limestone around, is it?
Well, that's right. And you know, given that New Zealand is caused by earthquakes and we live them at the Shaky Isles, we've got these two tectonic plates, the Pacific and the Australian, joining up and pushing up the country. You'd expect to see a bit more old seabed coming up,
yeah.
But there isn't a lot in New Zealand and north-facing slopes that is good for growing grapes. There were a few patches.
Yeah.
And we went hunting for it. My brother-in-law is a great winemaker, Jeff Sinnott, one of New Zealand's great winemakers. And when we met in the late 90s, he said, take me to the Waitaki Valley, because, yes, Oamaru stone comes from near there, and we know that there are patches of limestone. I was able to show him the site that we chose.
Okay. And so you purchased the site and he makes the wines?
Yeah, well, we spent 2 years of due diligence and trying to establish whether it was warm enough, because we're right on the climatic edge.
Yeah, yeah.
We came up with a mathematical model from the few weather stations that are kind of around in a distance, and it was complete confabulation, because, in fact, it was cooler than we thought.
Yeah.
But interestingly, we've got this ozone hole over southern New Zealand, and there's no doubt, we now know, there's no doubt that ultraviolet intensity, to some extent, compensates for lack of heat.
Yes, well, it certainly makes the grape skins thicker and helps the ripening process of phenolics. So, okay, cool. And you've got a number of different sites, some of them on limestone, some of them are by the lake as well, and you've got these different sites. What are some of the differences in the sites that you've got?
Well, interestingly, in this area, the University of Otago brings its geology students up, because there's a concentration of different geologies in a very short space, from the schist of central Otago transferring to the grey wacky of Canterbury, just across the Waitaki River, really, mm-hmm. and patches of limestone, and there's even some volcanic rocks nearby.
I think my listeners know that limestone forms from old dead sea creatures that have sort of compacted over
old
time.
Old seabed.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But grey wacky is... There's a famous producer up in Marlborough called Grey Wacky.
Absolutely, yeah.
But what is Grey Wacky?
Kevin Chan. Grey Wacky is, you have to forgive me, it's a metamorphic rock.
Yeah.
So it's a rock whose deepest origins I don't know, but it's formed by just a lot of pressure.
Yeah, underground.
And even more pressure, it then forms into stria and causes schist, which is what we've got in central Otago.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Mm. So is it like schist, or is it a bit more...
It is. It's the pre-runner of schist. It's a bit softer.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So under a lot of pressure and a lot of heat over millions of years, you get schist. And as we like to say, central Otago is full of schist. And we've got limestone.
Nice. Nice. So you said the climate was right on the sort of edge of viticulture. A lot of people sort of think of central Otago as being on the edge, but I think you're even a little bit more marginal than them.
I think that's true, and we had to discover this for ourselves, as because I say there wasn't much climatic data, but central Otago is more continental in that it is surrounded by mountains.
Yeah.
We are more exposed to the Pacific Ocean on the east side of the country, so we're 50 to 70 k's, as I said, and we got much more maritime influence, so it's surprisingly our nights are cooler. And the summer heats don't achieve quite the peaks that central Otago does.
Yeah.
But we get a longer autumn with longer, therefore, hang time of the grapes when they're ripening. And it appears this does something very different to the skin of the grapes and therefore the style of the wine.
Okay, we'll talk about the wines in a minute. When we were talking at the vineyard, you were talking about the main issue for you guys is really in fruit set, which is when the fruit's been fertilised. What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, that's our biggest challenge, really, climatically. Being more maritime than central Otago, we are prone to the southeasterly weather sets that can occur in December when flowering occurs. And, of course, grape grapes are self-pollinators. All they need is warmth and dryness. But sometimes we get these cool, wet easterlies that can come in when we're flowering. And that cuts back our fertility and production, our yield, quite dramatically, which may also contribute to the quality of the wonderful quality of the wines we get, because they're concentrated in the end. But it does mean that we've got to make every little bit out of the small yield we get and make it pay.
So when we were talking, you mentioned something that I'd never ever heard of before, that something like the fertility of the grapes is related to the temperature. You sort of said that if it's...
Yeah, that, and particularly the fertilisation process of the grapes. They're self-pollinators, as I said, and the pollen produced by the stamens grows down the pollen tube into the ovary of the grape right beside it.
Yep.
And that occurs at a certain rate depending on temperature. And if it's too cool, they don't fertilise.
Yeah.
So sometimes we do get little grapes that have only got one instead of two seeds, or maybe none.
Yeah.
Small berries.
Yeah.
More skin, less juice. Winemakers love them.
Yeah, yeah. It's...
For that, because the flavour comes from the skin.
Yeah, yeah.
As a producer, I like it if the grapes are a little bit bigger.
It's easier to make a bit more money, isn't it?
Well, it's economies, yes.
So the UK is pretty marginal, and in the UK they lose, every now and then they get a loss. And you're saying you've lost two vintages because of poor fertilisation.
Particularly early on we were, and one of our problems that relates to fertility as well is late frosts in the spring. And this turned out to be a frostier year than we expected. We expected Central Otago to be frostier, but in fact we've got our own problems.
Yeah.
So we used to fight them with helicopters to bring down the warmer air in an inversion layer.
Yep.
We finally, in the last few years, managed to get in permanent frost-fighting fans, which bring down that cool air. They're more efficient. They come on and we can afford to run them earlier and just keep the ambient temperature generally warmer. And we're getting quite good results from that.
I got to the vineyard a little bit earlier than you, and I was looking at it, talking to my dad, because he drove me up here, and I got a little bit confused, because I could see the fans, and I went, okay, fans for frost. And then I saw that your grapes were actually, your fruiting layer was actually quite close to the ground, which is fans for frost, but normally you go for a high fruiting zone to get off away from the ground frost, but you were quite closer to the ground than I would have expected.
So you're right. If you're talking inversion frosts, which is 95% of them, then you have the coldest temperature at the ground. There are radiation frosts, so the coldest is right by the ground, and then within a metre of the ground, you've actually gone up a couple of degrees. Mm. We were expecting the wind to be our biggest problem, which was why we kept the canopy down.
Yeah.
There's some doubt as to whether another 100 or 200 millimetres of canopy height would have made a big difference to the frost that we do get.
We were also talking about different rootstocks, and one of the things you were talking about was, partly because it's a new vineyard area and you don't really know what you're planting and what's going to work, but you're saying that rootstocks give you some protection against frost through diversity. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, Jeff was pretty smart. I mean, Jeff was a very senior student at Roseworthy College in South Australia as a young adult, and he knew that we needed to have a variety of both clones to get complexity in the wine, clones of the actual grapes themselves, but also of the rootstock. And we were also experimenting because it was new territory, this limestone land.
Yeah.
But what it's turned out is that has also given us difference, all these different rootstock and scion, as it's called, the S-C-I-O-N, the actual top part, the fruiting part. The different combinations give us different timings in relation to flowering, in relation to the time it takes for the fruit to ripen. So we get a bit of a variety, and it also spreads the risk when weather is bad. If we're getting, New Zealand's two little islands in the roaring 40s and go through, four seasons in one day, as the song's about it, and without that continental landmass, it's unstable. So we can quite often have bad weather for a day or two and then some very warm weather. So having a variety of timing of flowering really spreads our risk quite a bit.
It does mean that when you harvest, though, you'll get different blocks or different segments of your vineyard coming through at different levels. Is that an issue? Or
yeah, by that stage, it's less. There's less difference, but yes, we watch that closely, and we do harvest them in sequence according to ripeness. I mean, we're going through them all the time and deciding which needs picking next.
Let's talk a little bit about the wines. Obviously, Pinot Noir, that's got to be the reading online about your website at
oslawine.co.nz.
You're a bit of a Pinot Noir man.
Absolutely. We came here to do Pinot Noir on limestone, like Burgundy, really. We're not supposed to compare New World with Old World, but we really wanted to see what the limestone influence was. Mm. And the one we wanted to do was Pinot Noir. Would have loved to have done Chardonnay when we planted in the early 2000s, but we were unable to source in New Zealand at that time Chardonnay clones that would set fruit in this climate.
So we tried some of the different Pinots, quite different vintages, and they got quite different flavour profiles as well. We tried your 15 Caroline Pinot Noir and your 16 Caroline, and they're almost chalk and cheese in terms of the wines themselves. One was a little bit more chunky, a little bit bigger, and the other one was a little bit more, I think the word refined was a really good example, because it still had some guts, but it felt a lot lighter.
Well, we celebrate vintage variation. You could say we have to, because we get it. But isn't that one of the beauties of wine, that is not corporate wine? We're talking about real wine that expresses the year and the site that it came from.
Yeah. Also, I suppose there's a little bit of learning about how to get that wine the way you like it.
There's a massive learning curve, and we're learning how to manage quite difficult conditions to get pretty special wines. But as you mentioned earlier, we can't always achieve those top-end wines that we really set out to produce. Our Caroline's Pinot Noir is our signature wine, and we only produce it in the years when we've got fruit of the quality that will produce it.
I had a rosé that was from your vineyard that makes the Caroline, and you said it wasn't good enough to make a...
That was a bad year. Great rosé, but not top Pinot.
Cracking rosé. Yeah. It's one of those wines where you make a really good wine, and you're like... Bugger. Yes. I liked it. I thought that was brilliant. I noticed you'd won a few awards as well at the IWC.
Well, we're pretty chuffed. The last five vintages of our Caroline's Pinot Noir have won gold in the IWC, the Oscars and the wine world, I'm told, in London, the International Wine Challenge. Two of those got trophies. So, yeah, we think we're on the right track. We're certainly producing a savoury style that which is what we set out to do.
Yeah, very Burgundian. You also make Riesling, and I tried your Riesling. Some of one or two of them were a bit oily, which is fine. Yeah, some people like that, some do. There was one that you did as a spat laser with about 40 grams of sugar, and the acidity of the wine wasn't overpowering, but the 40 grams you normally think is going to come across quite sweet, and it actually had a really nice balance in there. I quite like that.
Well, I think Jeff, the winemaker, is a master of the dark art of balancing the acid that you end up with leaving residual sugar in when he's doing the ferments, when he's overseeing the ferments. And I think that balance between alcohol, sugar, and acid is critical. And I think he's very good at getting that equilateral triangle.
I think what surprised me is I was expecting wines that were a little more acidic, and maybe the tannins, because acidity, if you have high acidity, you tend to pick up the tannins as well. And I was expecting wines to be a little bit more tannic and a lot more acidic, but the acidity was always in balance.
Yeah, I think he's a master, and I think there's a minimum of fining. There's always an opportunity for doing a little bit of fining. Yeah. But he does seem to get it right, and I think the ferment temperature and time and all of those characteristics seem to be second nature to him.
I think one of the wines that's always surprising is a little bit of Gewürz. You know, it's not everybody's cup of tea. I like a nice Gewürz as long as it's not too overpowering. I thought your Gewürz did the job quite nicely, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we took over a vineyard that had a little plot of Gewürz, so it's the first Gewürz, one of the first Gewürz in the valley. And we really like it. It's slightly restrained. It's not a full-on Turkish delight, oily It's more of a cool climate one, and I think Gewurz should be a cool climate variety.
And the last one was you do a Pinot Gris, or several different styles of Pinot Gris, but I think your view of Pinot Gris is it should be a Chardonnay.
Look, we produce three beautiful different Pinot Gris, but our signature Pinot Gris is made like a Chardonnay. Our Audrey's from the limestone block.
Yeah.
And one day when we can, we will start planting some of the new Chablis Chardonnay clones on that site, because we think we can produce a stunning Chardonnay, and that's on the bucket list.
All right, Jim. I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Cheers, bud.